Hello and welcome, all you weirdos, academics, and everything in between. My name is Alex, and I'm going to be your host throughout this sociological deep dive into the unexplained. I want to go ahead and take a second to just profusely thank anyone who's decided to tune into this. This podcast is very much a passion project of mine, and I'm really, really hoping to build it into something that can usher in new approaches, and most importantly, new voices into the field of paranormal study and the weirdosphere. Ever since I was basically waddling, probably, you know, as soon as I could speak and read and interact with the world around me, I have been completely enamored with all things mysterious, magical, unexplained, fringe, considered by popular society. And it has really been a driving force behind both my personality, the way I view the world, my belief systems, all those things. And up until recently, I never really, I think it had to do with where I grew up and the culture I grew up in. I didn't have the tools to seek out and find a community or find the content or literature or anything like that to be able to expand and really, I guess, nurture and feed this love for the unexplained that I had. And so it's only very, very recently that I really started digging into the actual world of paranormal investigation, you know, that goes past the kind of entertainment value type investigations, you know, past the ghost hunting shows and the scary movies and stuff like that. You know, I found myself kind of going down the rabbit hole and discovering people and, you know, who were really doing the work to investigate the phenomenon, find out what's going on and what the implications of its existence is to humanity, to life. And it's been amazing and beautiful, and I've learned so much, and I have, you know, really found somewhere I feel welcome, even though I don't actually have friends in real life that I sit down and talk about this stuff with. But it's been a lot of long nights and days, you know, immersed in X-Files episodes and parapsychology books and Reddit threads, and I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly. And especially now, because that was what brought me to creating this podcast. This was very much birthed from a call to action by an amazing paranormal investigator by the name of Tyler Strand during a live stream event that I was tuned into, put on by Greg and Dana Newkirk, who, if you're not familiar with them, are incredible, incredible paranormal investigators, but they also run the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult. So basically, this live stream was like an online paracon put on by Greg and Dana, and they had various speakers from different areas in the field with different specialties and all that. And so Tyler was one of the first lecturers, and he gave a lecture on his artwork and how he uses his art to intermingle with and study and kind of express, you know, his relationship to the unexplained and the paranormal. And towards the end, he started talking a little bit on how if you're watching just kind of at face value or consuming any paranormal media, it's easy to think that if you have an interest in this, that you can't really contribute anything unless you have a ghost hunting show or one of the, you know, more famous faces. And that's really not true. And so what he said that really hit me and gave me this idea was that we all have individual talents. Everyone has a talent, whether or not it relates to the paranormal or the study of it. We all have talents, and we can use it to apply to paranormal research. If you are really interested in, you know, figuring out what's going on and studying these phenomena, the unexplained and all of the beauty behind it, you just have to think outside of the box. And that immediately got the wheels turning in my head. And I'm not kidding, probably within an hour or two, this idea was birthed. And the swiftness with which the idea came to me and how seamless it was. I mean, within, you know, like I said, a couple of hours, I was not only thought of the idea of the podcast, but topics for episodes just boom, 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 you know, started hitting me. I thought of 7 off the bat, and I was like, okay, this, you know, there's something to this. I could actually do something with this. So that's really the origin of this podcast. So I definitely have Tyler to thank for this in a roundabout way. and a little bit on my academic background, because this is where sociology comes into it. I am currently 2 years out of graduating with a bachelor's degree in sociology from Baylor University down in Miami. And after following a couple of career paths that seemed right for me, I was very promptly steered away by the universal powers that be, we'll say. And until recently, I've kind of been floating around in limbo with regards to, like, what the fuck I want to do with my life. And my focus within the realm of sociology during my undergrad studies was race and systems of inequality and oppression. So because of that, my worldview operates very heavily through a lens of racial justice, and this was at the core of the myriad of career paths I had kind of looked into and considered a couple of months ago. And, you know, when those proved to not really be the right path for me, it was very concerning, and I was very anxious, because I knew that, you know, what I wanted to do with my life, I didn't want to do something that felt like work. I didn't want to, you know, stick to the typical nonprofit 9-to-5, and nonprofits in and of themselves, that's a whole nother thing. I became very disillusioned with that world pretty quickly, as a lot of people do. But I knew that, I wouldn't be able to live my life without having the, I don't want to say activism, because I don't consider myself an activist. I think that that is a term that you can't really apply to yourself lightly unless you do some pretty fucking heavy work. And I'm by no means one of those people. But it is very much a priority of mine to constantly have, you know, this lens of racial justice and inequality and the reality of that in our world. I always have that at the forefront of my mind and make it known to people. So I knew whatever I ended up doing with my life, that had to be incorporated, but, you know, nothing was kind of, you know, it didn't make sense. Nothing was coming into play. I had no ideas of how that could be a thing and then still do something that I enjoyed. And then this happened. So it like I said, it came together so seamlessly and so beautifully. So this brings me to the, very much the underlying but primary purpose of this podcast is, if you've ever taken even a cursory glance at the field of paranormal research, you're going to notice that this is a field, like many scientific fields, if you want to consider, you know, parapsychology scientific, it is dominated by white people. And this is a problem for multiple obvious reasons. The first one obviously being that this does a disservice to investigators of color or people of color who are interested in this field, who love this field, who have very valuable insights and do very valuable, brilliant research, but who probably don't get the same access or have a harder time, just like in the myriad of other, you know, fields that this happens, or who feel, you know, kind of barred off from the mainstream in paranormal research. And not only this, but it does a disservice to the research itself, because if we're not having accurate representation of, you know, Black, Indigenous, you know, voices of color, we're missing out on vital knowledge and perspectives. I've thought about this, like, you know, to no end. I can't imagine how many just fountains of knowledge, hidden knowledge there is out there that is, you know, that's not being tapped into, because, you know, we have such a homogenous base of mainstream researchers, or just researchers in general, and they're overlooking, or when it comes to communities or people of color, they're kind of an afterthought, and we're missing out on, you know, the full picture. We know the paranormal, the unexplained, does not discriminate. This is a universal human experience. This happens to everyone. This happens to every culture, every race, everywhere in the world. So we know that white people are not the only people experiencing the paranormal, and therefore we cannot be the only people studying it. So that's why I really want to use this podcast to incorporate these voices and the research of people who are not white in the field, because, you know, typically when investigations intersect with marginalized communities, especially you see this on TV most commonly, the dialogue is often, at best, malinformed, and at worst, and most commonly, just overtly racist. This is most commonly seen, I think, at least from what I've witnessed, with any Afro-diasporic spiritual traditions, also known as the ATRs, the African traditional religions, and with native tropes. I'm not going to get too much into this because that is a whole other tangent I can get into and will actually be featured in later episodes. But again, if you've done the cursory, you know, glance over of popular paranormal media, you'll see this blatantly. So once the show really gets rolling, I plan on having, people of color from all backgrounds, to come on and chat and theorize and give any personal or even cultural perspectives on all things unexplained. So stay tuned for some contact info at the end of the, at the end of this episode. So if anyone who, falls into that category is interested or just wants to give, you know, like a story or anything like that, we can get in contact. So, now that you guys hopefully have a better idea of what this podcast is all about, let's go ahead and dig in. Let's get going on this first topic. I chose this topic for the first episode because I think it's a great intro into the general kind of ideas and comparisons we're going to be making throughout the show. And this topic is liminal spaces and the paranormal. So some of you might be familiar with this general theory. It's most thoroughly highlighted and explained in parapsychologist George P. Hansen's book called The Trickster and the Paranormal. The idea behind this is basically that liminality serves as a sort of breeding ground, I'm using my own words here, for the unexplained because of the lack of permanence in places in which it exists. So if this is just a far out, you've never heard any of these terms, we're gonna get down to the basics and then build off of that. So, the word liminality or liminal, it originates from a Latin word, limen, which means a threshold. And I'm sure if you've never heard of the word liminal or the idea of liminality, you've probably heard of liminal spaces, and if you haven't, you've most definitely been in one. So, liminal spaces are, as we know them, places that put us in a betwixt or between state. So, places that are a physical representation of this idea of liminality, basically a threshold. So, that pause or that kind of halting in breath between where you were and where you're going. And this idea of liminality, in anthropology, it's actually known as this feeling of ambiguity or disorientation that occurs in the middle stage of a rite of passage, or initiatory experience. And this is very relevant to how it intersects with the paranormal. If you've done any research or study into esoterica or the old mystery traditions or shamanism or any like initiatory spiritual path, you'll know that this is very significant, that entrance into these paths does not come easily and it does not come without initiation. So that idea of the disorientation or ambiguity is very important to the physical presence of liminality in these liminal spaces. To give you guys a good example, I was reading actually on Tumblr a couple of months ago. There's actually a whole tag, or like a, I guess, subsection of Tumblr known as liminal Tumblr, which is like chock full of people who are really obsessed with the aesthetic and the feel of liminal spaces. I found it because I myself am obsessed with these spaces and the feeling and all of that cool stuff that comes along with them. But I found this awesome post by this person who was talking about like rest stops, highway rest stops. And this person who did the original post basically said, you know, do you ever drive by a rest stop and just think like, oh my God, there's actually people that work there. Like there's someone who's not, you know, who's constantly there instead of just passing through like all of us do. And then another person adds on to it, reblogs it and says, yeah, I actually am one of those people. I've worked in, you know, a highway rest stop for however many number of years. Here's some of the crazy shit that's happened. So, for example, one of the stories was that this individual, at some, you know, very, very late hour of the night / early hour of the morning, when there wasn't a lot of traffic coming through, locked the doors and, you know, started mopping the main area in front of the bathrooms and the front desk. And they went to the custodial closet to go return the mop and the bucket. And when they came out, there were fresh, like, footprints in the kind of the wet streaks of where the mop was, and the doors were still locked. No one had come in. They checked the security footage and all of that. And then another one, which was my absolute favorite, was that frequently they said truckers who had been going on the same route for, you know, like career truckers, been going on the same route for, you know, 10, 15 plus years, they would come and complain about how, like, the fried chicken joint that was connected to the rest stop, how it wasn't there anymore and, like, what had happened to it. And the worker would respond, like, sir, that's been gone for, like, 15 years. And the truckers would swear that was bullshit, that they had been there just the week before on the, like, exiting or entering part of their round trip. And this so beautifully illustrates the this high strangeness that happens in these liminal spaces, these transitory places, you know, such as, you know, possible spirit activity, or the, which my personal favorite, the passage of time is different. I think that is so incredibly interesting in these spaces. It's almost as if they're like interdimensional. And so basically the idea is that kind of by being in these liminal spaces, we're automatically thrust into this state of liminality, meaning disorientation or ambiguity, that in my opinion opens us up to experiencing the paranormal, or again literally opens up, you know, maybe I don't want to say a portal to another dimension, but maybe in these places that, you know, that veil is a little bit thinner. And I think that's worth something, worth investigating. And if you think about it, I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, these spaces, so transitory places, places like, you know, bus stops, airports, highways, you know, laundromats, rest stops, all of these places where, you know, people aren't meant to be in permanently, i.e. there is no permanence there. There is so much paranormal activity reported in these places. Think about, I don't know about you guys, but I have heard so many stories that involve, like, cryptid sightings on, you know, these lonely little highways, or think about Women in White, the, you know, these spirits who seem to pop up, you know, all over the place, of women in white dresses, and they're typically, you know, in the middle of a road on a highway or an interstate, stuff like that. It is, if you really take a second to look into it, you will see that there are crazy amounts of paranormal activity reported in places that would be categorized as liminal spaces. So if we want to take it back to this anthropological view of liminality, it's almost as if that same energy that births in initiatory experience in, you know, in the shaman or in the esoteric initiate, it clearly does something to us where we are initiated into a new way or even realm of being, even if only for a moment. And this is also very true for liminal states of existence, not only physical places. So when you're in a transitory cycle or, you know, period of time in your life, you know, say if you're in between jobs, in between moving, if, you know, just getting a divorce, in between relationships, this is very true also when it comes to poltergeist phenomena, which is very interesting to look into, that a lot of poltergeist phenomena are reported around young people, like adolescents going through puberty. This is very interesting to look at, and a lot of people have theorized that this actually causes it, that these, you know, feelings of angst and sort of that, you know, that middle point between being a child and an adult, that you know, an adolescent in puberty is in a liminal space physically, emotionally, their entire being is liminal. They are betwixt and between, you know, the two states of life. So anyways, this all has incredibly interesting implications for paranormal phenomena. But now that we've gone through, you know, this, I think, dug into pretty well the idea of liminality and what it means, let's talk about how this relates to sociology and how we can apply some sociological theories, or at least ideas, to this. So when I started doing the research for this topic and writing down my notes, I wanted to see if I could look back into my childhood and adolescent years and see if I could get any insight, you know, from stuff back then. And it was very funny because I was able to kind of measure the conversations I had or the attitudes towards the paranormal and the unexplained when it came to my friends on a scale of class. And that was very telltale to me, and it fits in, I think, pretty well with this topic. So growing up, I noticed that none of my friends in middle to upper class families really believed in or even discussed the paranormal or anything really supernatural at all. But on the converse, my friends who were on the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, it was very much almost an absolute. Like, it was just a thing. It wasn't something we talked about obsessively, but when the conversation did come up, it was not skeptical at all. It was from a point of, yeah, I lived in a house or an apartment that was haunted. We had, you know, I have stories of, you know, my grandmother experiencing the same thing. What was the most interesting thing to me when I started really looking back and thinking about it, my friends who were from single mother households or households that were very matriarchal always reported, well, for one, supernatural or paranormal activity, but also a lot of them had mothers or grandmothers or aunts who had this gift of kind of premonition, but of course they didn't word it that way. It was just whenever she had a bad feeling, it was always correct. Something bad always came after that. I remember when we were out, you know, we would be out drinking or at a party or just being generally debaucherous. And, you know, my friend, whose mom had this gift, I guess, you know, if she would get a call and said, yo, you guys need to get home, I have a bad feeling, not even a single fight was put up because, you know, mama was always right. Like, this feeling she had, it was always followed by something actually bad happening. And we actually escaped a lot of shit shows because of that. It was incredible to watch play out, actually. So this little personal anecdote funnels into the idea of marginalization creating a perpetual state of liminality. And this is actually discussed in Hellier, in the documentary series I briefly mentioned earlier, I think, when I was talking about Tyler Strand and Greg and Dana Newkirk. So I'm going to try to keep this brief, and anyone who's seen Hellier is going to know why I laugh, because that's a very hard thing to do. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Just don't even worry about what it is. You don't even have to Google it. If you're into this type of stuff, just go watch Hellier. So basically what happens is that Greg Newkirk, around 2012, I believe it was, received this crazy, insane, long email from this guy out in the middle of Kentucky in a town called Hellier. Very, very, very rural old mining town out in Kentucky. And he said that there were these little goblin-looking creatures that could possibly be of an extraterrestrial origin, terrorizing his home, scaring his kids. He thought they were coming out of the old mine shaft or cave on the edge of his property. And so this basically leads Greg and Dana and some other people to go down and investigate this, and it funnels into this crazy, insane story of synchronicity, and it hits on about just every topic in what we would call supernatural. It's absolutely phenomenal. It changed my life, brought me here, so I have them to thank for this. But anyways, the town of Hellier is, if you're not familiar with Appalachia, a lot of these old towns in the mountains, they're old mining towns. They are very, very, very poor, very under-resourced. The stats on, you know, things like education and, you know, health and, you know, anything you would expect to go wrong in communities that are historically marginalized and, you know, just not taken care of properly. That's pretty much Hellier and a lot of these old mining towns out in Appalachia. But so, what is mentioned by Greg in Hellier in one of the episodes is that, he actually references, The Trickster and the Paranormal, Hansen's book, which is how I found it. And he talks about how, this sense of marginality creates a permanent state almost of liminality, really. And therefore, if we're going off of Hansen's theory, it makes hellier in places like it. Just a goldmine of paranormal activity and all kinds of high strangeness. And what's so curious about this is if you stop and think about it, how many off the beaten path kind of highway drive-by towns have insane occurrences of high strangeness and paranormal activity? From what I've read and heard, a very interesting kind of place that fits perfectly into this framework where high strangeness and all kinds of supernatural activity absolutely abounds is on reservations. And I saw a tweet the other day, actually, from a girl I follow who is Native, and she was talking about how, how funny and silly it is that white people who live around reservations, they talk as if they're, afraid of Native people and afraid of reservations. And she said, it's so funny how white people think that we're the scary, the thing to fear on reservations, when really y'all should be scared of the cryptids. And that was just so incredibly perfect. And then, of course, now I'm like, okay, I gotta go down the rabbit hole. Let me, see how many, sightings and stories from reservations can I dig up. And unfortunately, I say unfortunately because I don't want to romanticize this, be like, oh, that's, so cool. It's, it's sad because if we're fitting them into this framework, reservations really are a perfect catalyst for activity because they are physical representations of marginalization. That's why I'm saying unfortunately, because it's not a, it's not a good thing. It's not a cool thing. I don't want to, like I said, romanticize, the poverty and the disenfranchisement of, the people in the communities who, live on reservations, and the lack of resources, and just the complete stiff arm by the government they get. But in regards to the topic we are talking about, it does fit in perfectly, into this, this idea of marginalization, because, they really are. This is the absolute physical representation of being marginalized. We're talking about, groups of people who pre-colonially, were spread out on this entire monstrosity of a landmass, and then through violent genocide and colonialism were shoved onto, comparatively speaking, to what it was before, or what they had before, shoebox-sized, plots of land. I think it is no surprise that this type of activity is, from what I've heard, very prevalent on reservations. And I'm going to try to dig into that at a later date if I can line up some people to come and talk about it for a later episode. So to get back on track, we can use this lens of marginality to go deeper and even go as far to say that people who are on the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, they even spend more time in liminal spaces. So places like, laundromats. You don't see too many millionaires going to laundromats because they probably already have, working laundry machines in their homes. Bus stops, public transportation, depending on, which city you're in. Most public transportation is for, middle to lower working class people because they, can't afford to have a car or multiple cars. Same thing with, again, going back to the rest stops, depending on where you're moving, how you're moving, how much money you have to move, some people who are better off can just take a flight, have their stuff shipped over to where they're going. People who don't have that type of money or luxury typically have to pack shit into their car, go along highways. So now all of this is not to say that wealthy people don't experience a paranormal. There's about 5,000 haunted mansions in this country alone to prove that that is not the case. But I think it's almost as if the strangeness and the paranormal activity that's experienced by marginalized groups or marginalized people is of a different caliber. And this is all in my opinion. This is kind of my little think piece part right here. The activity that marginalized people experience, from what I've witnessed and heard, it seems to be more interactive. You know, we're not just talking about energetic imprints that cause apparitions of women in colonial garb to, you know, walk in circles through, you know, a mansion or an old plantation. The activity experienced by people in these states or spaces of liminality or marginality, you know, bad or good, fearful or, you know, comforting, it almost seems to have a purpose. So in other words, it feels as if it's more meaningful almost. And again, this is something, I wish I could expand more on this, but this is something for me that has almost been more of an intuitive observation. It's an idea that I haven't formulated enough yet to be able to expand on. It was just kind of one of those things that came to me when I was researching this and when I was writing my notes, and I felt like it was worth saying. So if there's anyone who can put this more eloquently or can expand on this, definitely contact me, get with me. I want to hear. I want this to be an interactive, you know, podcast. I want to hear what y'all have to say. So if there really is anything to these observations that I'm bringing up here, I think there could be some really pretty profound implications of what's going on if we start to examine this comparison of supernatural activity along, you know, class lines, along socioeconomic lines. Because I think there is a comparison to be made, and I think there are implications. I just think it's going to take, you know, a good handful of us to kind of put our heads together and really look into it and think outside of the box. And again, this circles right back around to why it is so incredibly vital that, you know, diverse voices are being featured in this research, because we're going to be able to get the full picture or something closer to the full picture. Do I think we'll ever really find out what's going on in the whole, you know, the umbrella term of the supernatural? No, I don't really think it's meant to be found out, at least not in this age of time. But again, when it comes to ideas and theories and opinions like the one, you know, that I'm posing here now, I think, you know, there is something to be uncovered here. And yeah, it's going to take, you know, a lot of us from a myriad of different backgrounds to be able to uncover it. And I think it could be something really beautiful and cool as shit if and when we do it. So that pretty much brings me to the end of this topic and this episode. So I don't know if you guys saw in the description of the podcast, but I did label this as an interactive show, meaning I want to hear your theories and opinions, your stories, your research, anything. I am absolutely by no means an expert in this field, and there's still troves of paranormal literature and content that I haven't dug into. So I really want you guys to join me along for this ride, and genuinely have us work together to look at this stuff in a new light. Let's think of it as almost like a group project, except we're all gonna put in equal work. I think we can do some really awesome shit here and hopefully get on a track of, you know, shaking this field up a little bit for the better. So with that being said, if you are a Black, Indigenous, or person of color and you have theories, research, or even a personal experience you'd like to share, I would be absolutely delighted to hear from you and even have you on to talk, if you're cool with that, if that's something you'd be interested in. Anyone else who does not fit any of those descriptions, you are absolutely still free to contact me. I'm just emphasizing the, you know, the people I would like to have on to speak. I am going to be centering voices of color primarily, but I do want to hear, you know, from anyone. So like I said, we can start, you know, formulating theories or just talk and chat and look into weird, cool shit and maybe build a community, you know? So, with all that being said, if you want to get with me, I'm still in the process of creating some social media accounts. I probably won't do that until I really get this up and running and start getting some listens. But if you want to contact me by email, the email address is supernaturalsociologypod@gmail.com. So that brings us to the end of it, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope this wasn't too painful to listen to in terms of audio. I am recording this on my voice memo on my phone, so those little probably like taps you've heard throughout the show have been me pressing pause to breathe because I still have not learned how to speak without like wheezing and getting out of breath. I don't know if that's a common thing for podcasters or if I'm just weird, which I probably am, but I found it very difficult to speak for 35 minutes straight without gasping for air. So yeah, I'm gonna, again, once this gets up and running and I can get, you know, a little bit more educated on podcasting, I'm gonna try to edit the audio better. I am gonna get a microphone, and all that cool fun stuff. So, again, y'all are awesome. I really look forward to hearing from anyone and everyone. And thank you so much, guys. Stay weird.